This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio. Here we believe when the people speak, they make a difference. You can listen to the People Speak live on BBS Radio every Tuesday and Wednesday night at 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or by going to our site at thepeoplespeakradio.net. There you can also listen to past shows in our iPod Ready archive section. That's thepeoplespeakradio.net. And you can also listen to us via satellite on your Nokia phones. For details, just go to the website. Some of our shows carry an intensified spirit, and this is one of these shows. It is a story that is shocking, and we hope to add to this oral history that will honor the American victims of an attack on American naval ship. Gary Brumat and David Lewis of the USS Liberty Veterans Association are our guests of honor tonight on People Speak. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for your service and for your tireless effort to keep this tragic part of our history in the light of day.
We thank you for the opportunity to speak, Bashima. It's always good to tell our story. We thank you very much, and you know, it's like to dedicate the show to the 34 men that lost their lives, if it's okay.
It is absolutely, it is more than okay. We would be honored to do that. 41 years ago, former Lieutenant Commander David Lewis and former U.S. Seaman Gary Brumat were on the USS Liberty on a June day in 67 when the ship was attacked by Israeli Air Force and Navy. Their story of what they saw and experienced and their efforts for an investigation to publicly expose the truth of that tragedy have been an ongoing effort shared by many other survivors of the Liberty. David, can you take us back to the hours before the attack on the Liberty?
Well, it was a bright, sunny day, perfect visibility. We all morning long we'd had overflights by Israeli aircraft, some so low that we could wave at the pilot and they could wave back at us. We felt very good. There was a friend nearby and we weren't in danger.
So you had no sense of anything amiss. Was it normal to see Israeli planes in the area?
Well, there was a war going on the shore, so we thought nothing was wrong with it when they came out and looked at us and looked us over time and time again, so they obviously knew who we were.
Gary, what were you doing? You were a U.S. seaman on board the Liberty. What were you doing
I was in engineering. Would be considered a fireman or a third-class petty officer.
I see.
Our job was simply to make the ship go, to get Dave and his group out to where they'd done their research. But like Dave said, it was a very clear, nice day. We had just relaxed the battle dress. We had just backed down from a general quarters drill, and the captain came on the 1MC, which is a public address system on the ship, and told us hostilities on the beach, 12.6 nautical miles, I think was the correct distance. And I can remember going topside for a moment, me and J.T. Newell, we were both repair petty officers in B Division, and there was huge columns of black smoke on the on the coast there at Ella Ridge, and, you know, it looked like perhaps some oil tanks burning or something. And we knew we were in a hostile area, but as Mr. Dave said, you know, we had been reconned that morning, and Israel was supposed to have been an ally, so it, you know, plus, we were an American ship, USS stands for United States Ship, and it's just as sovereign as a piece of America as the entire state of Nebraska is.
So you felt perfectly at ease, even though it was war, and because of the fact that they were an Allied ship. David, can you talk to us about the Liberty itself? What was the purpose of the Liberty? What kind of capacity did it have? I understand it was designed for intelligence surveillance.
Yeah. Well, if you remember back then, the Russians had come out with tuna trawlers. They were all over the place, intelligence collectors. And it was decided that we should reciprocate and have mobile platforms of our own to collect intelligence. And these ships were taken out of mothballs. Actually, the Liberty is a victory hull. And they were converted to intelligence collectors, and our job was just to go around the world and see what was going on, what kind of stability the governments had, and that sort of thing.
It was considered a state-of-the-art ship at the time, wasn't it?
Well, everybody says it was state-of-the-art. It was the only thing state-of-the-art on there was the first satellite in the U.S. inventory. We had an 18-foot diameter parabolic dish that apparently the Israelis thought was a horse ball, and it was a moon-bounce communication. There were no satellites in the air, but once we established communications via the moon, with only 5 watts, you could reach anywhere around the world. We had 4 shore stations, and with the moon, we could get 18 hours of communication. That was really state-of-the-art.
And tell me, David and Gary, you know, you can take turns. Tell me what happened when they started to attack.
Well, myself, I'll start off by joining them today. J.P. Newell and I, we had just started to work on one of our main feed lines to one of the boilers. And the first explosion, it scared me. Of course, I hopped straight up off the deck plate, the gray decks I was sitting on, and backed up. And the engineering spaces had what would be compared to a large atrium-type area up above us, up to the through the uptakes, and I thought a streamline had blown up, and it couldn't have been over 10 or 12 seconds. It was not very long. It seemed like I smelled burnt gunpowder, and about the time I smelled that, the general quarters alarm went off, and I thought, who in the world could be so stupid as to be shooting at an American ship? Little did I know it was our supposed ally.
I was below decks at all times. That was my general quarters station. So I simply went around to my various divisions, cheering people on, trying to see if we could find out who was doing this to us.
Was there any kind of retaliation on the part of the crew, David?
What did we have to retaliate with? The only thing we had for armament was a repel boarders armament. We had 40 caliber machine guns and a few 45 automatics. That was the extent of our armament on that ship.
You literally were just a sitting duck to this attack.
Correct.
Yes, we were.
We actually got one 50 caliber round fired at the aggressor. That was it.
And do you know if that hit met its target at all?
No. They was out of range. Browning has only got a 2,000-yard range, and that's stretching it. And, of course, you're being shot at, and you've got two dead men laying there right by you. The guy that got the one round off, he had to force the 50-caliber round out of the belt and into the breech. And the top of the gun had been damaged by a missile that had killed the two guys that was on the mount. And he fired one round, and that was it. And that was Seaman Dale Larkins from Nebraska. We didn't have any capacity to fight back, unfortunately.
That must have felt you left you feeling totally helpless.
We were totally helpless.
Kind of like a snowball in hell.
And how do you feel about it, even after all this time talking about the events that took place that day?
Well, it's hard to imagine that the U.S. government is so afraid of the Israeli lobby that for 41 years they will deny us justice.
Well, the rule of law has not applied to us. It's been a life-changing event for all of us. I always usually mention, you know, hindsight being 20/20. Mr. Dave and I have 41-plus years of hindsight. There's a lot of information that's come out. We've proven our case that there was no way that this was an accidental attack. It was totally intentional. I forget exactly Mr. Dave's words, but if it was an accident, and I think Mr. Dave said it was the best planned accident he had ever heard of.
The best planned accident in the history of the world.
Correct. You know, Israel, by their own admission, admitted that at 10:55 a.m. Tel Aviv time on the morning of June 8th of 1967, using the James Fighting Ships, which is a British publication, they had identified the USS Liberty as American Signet Unit, and Signet being Signal Intelligence. So, I mean, they always knew who we were. They had reconned us 10 or 12 times prior to the attack. I mean, there was nothing about us they didn't know. And, you know, it's you dig into the story and you look at it, and you cannot believe anything other than an intentional attack.
You know, we hire and elect people to run our governments, to run our wars. We trust them to send our children to live and to die and to fight for America. And when they say things like it was no accident, we ignore them. Why do you think that is, gentlemen?
Why are they pandering to the Jewish lobby now? It's the same thing. Israel is a supposed ally, and they can do no wrong. It doesn't matter that they violate all the laws, of all international laws. If you say anything, you're anti-Semitic.
You know, like Mr. Dave said, anytime we speak up or step out, one of the first things they throw at us is being anti-Semitic. But I tell you what, if being pro-American and standing up for what I believe is anti-Semitic, so be it. Send me a medal, because it sure as hell what I am. I'm an American. You know, and this may sound strange coming from me. You know, my greatest madness or irritant in all of this is not if the government of Israel. That's a foreign state. It's got its own agenda, and as time has shown, they're going to do what's best for them, regardless of who's involved. But I am really, really, I just get all bent out of shape at my own government, because they're the ones that put us in harm's way and hung us out to dry, and then have denied us justice as to what has happened 41-plus years ago. Mr. Dave and I both were a whole lot younger back when this happened. I hate to say, I hate to even think about it. I'm a senior citizen now. I don't like that thought, and we're still trying to get the truth told. Our war has not ended.
You know,
we're talking about it being an accident. It was such a well-planned accident that on the first strafing run, the Israelis took out the tuning section of every transmitting antenna on the ship.
The Israelis seem to have a lot of accidents as far as I can see. There's a question here that I was going to ask, and since it has come via text message from one of our listeners, Lydia from Illinois would like to ask a question of you, gentlemen. Did the government ever tell you to keep quiet about what you saw and experienced that day?
You want to start, Mr. Dave?
Well, they never told me to keep quiet, so I was going to let you go, Gary. I know an awful lot of troops were threatened.
Well, I can only tell what actually happened to me. Now, after we got to Valletta, Malta, on, I don't know what the date was, 13th or 14th, but I think it was the 14th of the afternoon. A few days after we got in port, someone came over the ship's public address system and said all individuals not in a watch station or duty station lay to the crew's mess, and which I did, and there was probably 15 of us in this group. There was a, if memory serves me correctly, one was a lieutenant and one was a lieutenant commander. These were both attorneys for Navy or some kind of legal officers. And they advised the group that, you know, hey, you're not to write home about what has happened or what you viewed. You can write home, tell your parents, wives, whatever, that you're fine. Things of this nature, you're under no circumstance are you allowed to talk to the press. When we're given clearance for you to speak to the press, we will let you know. Well, I'm waiting. It's been 41 plus years, and the Navy still hadn't told me it's all right to talk to the press. You know, and they were some of the guys that were virtually threatened that, you know, you will be quiet. One of our officers, who I'm staying real close contact with, I will not call his name, he received his Purple Heart after he was transferred to Germany. And the CO of the base there, the commanding officer, when he presented the Purple Heart to him, he told him, you're never to tell anybody where you got this from. That kind of garbage.
So you're a hero of the United States. You're a hero of our country, but you're not allowed to tell anybody that you're a hero.
Even with Captain McGonagall, he was awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor. Lyndon Johnson did not present it. It was presented at the Navy Yard in a very quiet situation. Captain McGonagall called me the day before and said he'd like somebody from the ship's company there. Could I come on down?
And for the information of those listeners that don't know the exact numbers, 34 Americans were killed in that attack. Another 174 were wounded, and the ship, a $40 million state-of-the-art signals intelligence platform, was later declared unsalvageable and sold for scrap metal. That is what happened to the USS Liberty and its crew members that day. The cover-up altered information, it suppressed information, and literally allowed for Americans, Israelis, to get away with murder. When we talk about these events, what role do you feel that the events of that day and the events of today's wars has Israel to do with the Middle East? You know, a lot of people say that, oh, it has nothing, you know, Israel is not a problem. But do you feel that even as far back as 67, when the Liberty was attacked, that Israel's actions have directly affected the events of our lives today here in America, facing potential World War III?
There's a direct correlation from then to today. And something I would like to bring out, just as a kind of a side note, after the Liberty was attacked and Israel basically was given a free pass for what they did, I think it was 9 months later, wasn't it, Mr. Dave, that the Pueblo was captured by the North Koreans? There's no way that North Korea would have ever taken the Pueblo in international waters had our government not let Israel get away with what they did. And I think it opened the door for a lot of problems for us. And I think there's a direct correlation.
On that subject, if I may, when I was released from the hospital, my admiral called me in. He said, Lewis, damn you, you just scuttled my whole fleet. I said, what do you mean, admiral? He said, well, now any third-rate power will attack us with impunity. And he was very prescient about that.
So you not only... So not only were you attacked, your crew members murdered, injured, and your ship laid to rest, you were blamed for future attacks?
Yes, but let me finish. After that, he said, and you're going to do penance. I said,
and you're going to do penance.
What would you like me to do? And he put me on his personal staff. He gave me $15 million a year in R&D funds for 3 years to design an electronic collection suit that could be put on combatants so this sort of thing could never happen again. And we did do that, and I was later at NSA, National Security Agency, when the procurement document came across my desk to buy these. So all of our collection now is done on combatants, and this can never happen again.
So if Israel were to attack another American ship, someone would stop them? Or I see.
Yeah.
And that was the penance that you had to do for being a victim of the Israeli government?
That was my penance. It was really an honor.
It's just amazing. I'd like to ask you, I know that a lot that you as veterans have been in close contact with veterans of today in many areas. Our sons and daughters are going over to these foreign wars caused by many of the actions, the direct actions of the Israeli government. And they're coming back, and they're not getting the level of care. How were the injured cared for during that period of time when the Liberty was attacked? How were your fellow crewmen cared for? And do they still receive a high level of care due to injuries they may have sustained during that time?
I think the physical injuries, Mr. Dave, wouldn't you agree, were addressed real nicely by the Navy. The Navy was pretty well taken care of its own. But, you know, back then...
In fact, tomorrow morning I'm going to the VA for a semi-annual appointment.
But there's early on, there are some horror stories that some of the guys can tell. One of them being Larry Weaver, one of the most egregious injured survivors. The Navy was going to let Larry out, and they wasn't going to give him a thing. And, I mean, he was a big, strapping lad, and he physically was pretty well devastated from all that happened to him, you know, and was not treated very nicely. And his service jacket, even, it doesn't even show he was a crewman on the Liberty. To add insult to injury.
Well, they tried to cover it up in so many ways. Even the common gravestone in Arlington Cemetery said killed in the Eastern Mediterranean. The implication was that they died in a barroom brawl or something of that nature rather than in a hostile action. It took us years and years and years to get that tombstone changed.
It's, kind of like what Mr. Dave is saying, another little side note. Back in June of 1989, there was a library named in Grafton, Wisconsin. It's called the USS Liberty Memorial Library. I was one of the crewmen that went up for the dedication, but the Jewish Council from Milwaukee, they fought this tooth and nail. Jim Grant was the mayor. He actually was ex-Navy man also. He didn't give an inch, and they ended up, there were two brothers that donated most of the money for this library. But, I mean, it was the Jewish Council in Milwaukee tried to keep this from happening, said it was an affront to the Jewish community. And all they were trying to do was remember these men that were murdered. And a really sad note to all this, the day of the dedication, everybody's there. There was a couple of 300-plus people there. They had a SWAT team on the roof of the VFW post because of the threats, what have you. And here this
SWAT team, what were they trying to do, stop book burnings or something?
Well, I'm not sure it was. You know, the Grafton folks didn't take any chances with the Liberty crew or its citizens while we were there. But that SWAT team wouldn't have been on that roof, and there wouldn't have been scads of plainclothes police and uniformed police had there not been afraid something may happen. And, you know,
and
all we were trying to do was dedicate a monument and a library.
Boy, you guys just couldn't win to save your souls during that period of time, could you?
Well, that's still going on today, dear. It didn't stop then. It's still very current today. You get out and try and do something.
You know, I have a question from John from Canada, and it is another question that I was going to ask. Now I'll read John's question. Gentlemen, do you have a theory of why this event happened? And mine was, has there ever been any speculation of what the Israelis were trying to hide that day?
Well, I strongly suspect that if it had not been for the Liberty, Israel would not have stopped at the Golan Heights. I think you'd have found them in Damascus the next day. And I think we were the spoil sport for their adventure. You might be interested also in Admiral Geis's comment. I was medevac to the USS America, and as soon as they slit my eyelids to open my eyes from the burnt paint and so forth, I was ordered to report to Admiral Geis in his stateroom. And he called me in. He set me down. He said, well, I want somebody to know what happened. But I've got to swear you to secrecy before I tell you. And he said that he had launched aircraft to come to our assistance, and almost immediately Robert McNamara was on the phone and ordered them recalled. He said he assumed that somebody in Washington thought he was stupid enough to have launched nuclear warheads, so he reconfigured a flight with aircraft capable only of carrying conventional armament. And he again launched them, and again notified Washington. And again, almost immediately, Lyndon Johnson ordered them recalled, and he protested and challenged the order, saying it is an American ship being attacked by a foreign power. And then Lyndon Johnson came on the phone and said he didn't give a damn if the ship sunk and all the Americans were killed. He would not embarrass an ally. So even at that early stage of the game, Lyndon Johnson knew who was doing the attacking.
And how do you feel in light of unbelievable statements out of the mouth of a president of this country? How does that? I mean, it makes me boil within.
Well,
I can't even imagine how you must feel.
I'll tell you what, too. Something I would like to mention, a book that'll shed a little light on this, is a book called Operation Cyanide by Peter Hoonan. Also, Peter Hoonan, in cooperation with Chris Mitchell, they were both with the BBC, they did a video called Dead in the Water. And if the Operation Cyanide, I'm sure you could get it from Barnes & Noble or any bookstore, you may have to order it. The Dead in the Water tape you could order from the Liberty Veterans Association, and I can provide you that address later if you like.
Please do.
Beg your pardon?
Please do. We would love to have that address given to our listeners.
Okay. Like I say, these are two things that give you maybe a little different perspective. You look at this a little different as far as that goes. And they're very worthwhile.
One of our strong supporters, who unfortunately lost his life on the way home from the last reunion, was in touch with the Russians, and he became a good friend of Admiral Shotsky. I don't know how that's spelled, but Admiral Shotsky at the time was a commanding officer of the Soviet submarine with nuclear warheads, and he had been given release to launch the nuclear warheads as soon as the first U.S. bomb dropped on Cairo. The Russians expected that we were going to get involved in the war, and he said that he only had the surface-to-surface missiles that required high reflectivity, so the only target he could locate was the Dome of the Rock, and that's what he had targeted. If the U.S. had dropped a bomb on Egypt, that's where Israel would have gone.
So Israel was just not remorseful or willing to stand down in any way, shape, or form?
No,
it was, you know, people talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and it was almost the start of the Third World War. Well, let me tell you something, and I think Mr. Day will back me up on this.
Yeah.
What happened there in the Middle East during the Six-Day War, that comes so frantically close. You know, they say we were within 3 minutes of this happening.
And I
do know that the story was told to four of our shipmates that they were not taken to the America. They were taken over to the Little Rock, which was a cruiser, was the flagship of the Sixth Fleet. And I think the skipper of the ship, and I cannot call his name because offhand I don't recall it, told our crewmen that we came within 3 minutes of popping Cairo, bombing it. And there is some corroboration to this story from some diplomats that were in the Middle East back at the time. Isn't that correct, Mr. Dave, or did I say something, any of that wrong?
Yes. No, he's got it right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we came very, very, very close to a horrible problem.
Well, I don't think we ever really avoided. I think we just probably put a delay switch on the problem because the events of that day, I believe, have really are still haunting us to this day. Israel is still literally getting away with murder.
Something I wonder, and this is just a wonderment on my part, because we, the Liberty crew, we know it wasn't an accident. We know for a fact that our government still is withholding documents. We've got no doubt about this.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure what they're withholding. But I feel like that possibly our government is still got an ace in the hole here that if need be, they might would play it against Israel. I think the Liberty is something our government at this point and Israel don't even want to talk about it. We filed a war crimes report and hell, nobody even respond. Our response was there will be no further action taken. This has already been decided.
So there's no engagement. Gentlemen, we're going to be taking a break right now. For those of you that have not had an opportunity, you can call toll-free internationally at 877-489-6350 or toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 888-228-4494. The numbers, again, are 877-489-6350 or 888-228-4494. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with some true American heroes. This is just an incredible story. Please stay tuned. Thank you very much.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit sosmorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
This land is yours.
Join us on the People Speak radio show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Maybe you and me. This land is mine, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the People Speak radio show. Our guests tonight, Gary Brumette and David Lewis of the USS Liberty Veterans Association, survivors of an infamous attack on the USS Liberty that killed 34 American Navy men and injured 174 and destroyed the ship entirely. You know, while we were on break, David was talking to me about some important information that I felt really needed to be said on air. David, could you go ahead and explain to me exactly what we were, explain to our listeners what we were discussing in the background?
It was Gary.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Gary. Go right ahead, Gary, please.
Okay. What we were talking about was there's two articles, two things out there that everybody needs to look at, and one of them is a book called Operation Cyanide by Peter Hoonan. Hoonan, during his research for this book, he was interviewing different people. And this Operation Cyanide came from a word, Lyndon Johnson, at his library he had like one paragraph about the attack on the Liberty, and in a side note, you might say it had Operation Cyanide on it. Well, that's how the cyanide part came up, and got to looking into it. Well, Peter Hoonan, who is a British writer, in some of his interviews, he was interviewing Rafa Itan, who was the Israeli intelligence, he was head of the Israeli intelligence services back at the time. And the interview was going along quite fine, and Peter Hoonan asked him, he says, what is Operation Cyanide? What do you know about it? And Eton's answer and his response to him made me realize that, hey, the United States or the America and Israel had some kind of an operation going on here that was called Cyanide. This is the information that our government will not release. Anybody interested in this, go to Barnes & Noble or whatever bookstore you might use. Ask for the book Operation Cyanide by Peter Hoonan. We have a Dead in the Water tape that was put together by Peter Hoonan and Chris Mitchell, who are both these guys work for the BBC. It has so much information on it. And if it won't get you excited or stirred up or make you want to look at this and see what really happened, I don't think anything will.
You didn't mention, Gary, what the Israelis' response was when asked about Operation Cyanide.
Well,
he said, I know what I can say, I know what I can't say, and I can't say anything about Operation Cyanide.
He reached up, and it was like he pulled a zipper across his lips, and that was the end of the interview. But, Mr. Dave, would you not agree that in your mind, if there's ever any doubt in your mind, didn't that cement it in your mind that there actually was this operation, that it was a joint operation between two countries?
Yeah.
So you don't feel that this was a lone operation. You believe that there was a collaboration going on here.
Right, and I think if you watch the Dead in the Water tape, you will see mention of something called the 303 Committee. I feel like that's where this operation came from. It's my belief there were two operations in play, and I'm sure some will disagree with me on this. The Navy had a plan in place and pulled us up to that region of the world, and the Navy tried to take care of us when we came under attack. And I think the politicians are an outgrowth from the 303 Committee. They had a plan in force, and it wasn't
The 303 Committee is the committee established in Washington to operate, to pass on black operations so that the president has deniability.
Interesting. I have no idea. I have never heard of the 303 Committee.
All of this is in the Dead in the Water tape, and like I say, I will email you where this tape can be ordered from.
Well, that's wonderful, and what we'll do is we'll go ahead and put that on the site, on our website, thepeoplespeakradio.net, for those that are interested. I will make sure that that goes on there. We have a caller. Andrew from Florida is on line 4. Andrew, do you have a question for the gentleman?
Yes, I do. Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, okay. My empathy for your suffering and the fate of your fellow crewmen. I wanted to, what do you think was the reason, if you think there was a hidden reason why these attacked you that day, that he wants to talk to? What other possible gain could they have gotten from a phone?
I can give you a hypothetical situation.
Sure.
Had Israel succeeded in sinking us, and they didn't have helicopter gunships overhead to pick off all survivors, when the debris washed ashore the next day, who would it be blamed on? And the U.S. would have been brought into the war, and it would have been a World War III. The Russians were all ready to launch nuclear warheads, so it would have been a nuclear war, too. That's nothing I can prove, but that is a potential reason for it.
Well, as Dave mentioned earlier, the sub T-174 or 172, Dave, which was it? Anyway, it was a Soviet sub sitting in the Gulf of Sidra with 8 nuclear weapons awaiting launch orders. In Israel, it would have been a piece of glass for the next 50-something thousand years.
And there were U.S. bombers over Egypt before they were recalled.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's why some people think that Lyndon Johnson was a hero. He recalled everything when he found out the Russians were ready to launch nukes rather than take a chance.
Sue in Massachusetts, thank you very much, Nick, for your question, Andrew. Sue in Massachusetts asks, is the USS Liberty a result of Israeli aggression against the USA, and did LBJ perpetrate that attack?
I think he...
I hear you guys laughing in the background.
I think he had prior knowledge.
Hindsight
makes me think he had prior knowledge and was duplicitous, but I cannot prove that. It's just, that's my observation from what I know and from what I've seen and the different people I've talked to. What do you think, Mr. Dave?
I'm inclined to agree with you. There's always the extreme possibility that we were supposed to be the scapegoat. And if Israel had, that Lyndon Johnson set us up, and it's possible that had Israel succeeded in killing all of us, that was going to be his motivation for entering the war. No, that's far out, but that's possible.
He hated Abdul Gamal Nasser, who was basically considered the, you know, the head Arab person in that part of the world, or the Arab League, I guess you would call it. They looked to him, and Johnston mortally hated him. You know, there's so much here that we don't know, but there's the body of evidence that we have that we do know that we have proven is staggering. It's just, it's unreal. But you can't get
all
the boys
the liberty,
in Washington to look at it.
All the liberty veterans have ever asked for is a complete and impartial investigation by Congress. Let the cards fall where they may.
Well, I don't think that's likely to happen, though.
Our detractors, they say that there's been 5, 10, 13 congressional investigations. There's even a traitor in Florida. He's a federal judge that wrote a book that is a distortion of fact. The book is not truthful in any capacity. But he himself on a radio program said, well, there had been 5 congressional investigations, but if you check the congressional record, as was done in March of 2005 for Peter Vering, Congressman Simmons from Connecticut did it, and Vering got a message back from the Navy at Simmons' request stating that there had never been but one official investigation into the USS Liberty, and that was the original Naval Court of Inquiry. On the 10th or the 12th of last month, a gentleman died, Captain Ward Boston, someone I hold in very high esteem. He was senior legal counsel to the court. He and Admiral Kidd are the two men that investigated the attack. They were only allowed 6 or 7 days to conduct the investigation. They were not allowed to go to Israel and talk to anyone. But Captain Boston, in numerous phone conversations I had, he told me that, you know, the Court of Inquiry, the original Court of Inquiry that he signed, was a forged and altered document. One of our officers swore to the fact that he saw Israeli motor torpedo boats shoot up 2 life rafts that had been put over the side and picked the other one up. We have another crewman on board that corroborates Lloyd's story, but, you know, this was excised out of the official record. You know, every conceivable thing that could have been done to us, it's been done.
It's been done, and with no apology. Have you ever received any kind of apology, even from those that believe that it was not an accident, such as Dean Rusk? Any of them? Nothing. Okay.
Admiral Starring, the head of the JAG Corps, who was Admiral McCain's legal advisor at the time, said that the Court of Inquiry was modified after it had left his hands.
No. It was a forged document.
It was fraudulent.
So you are convinced that there were also forgeries and alterations of the documents.
Well, there were alterations of the official findings of the court. Admiral Kidd took the findings to Washington, he stated when he got back to London, he told Captain Boston that either 2 individuals from state or either from the White House, he wasn't sure where they were from, they took and they rewrote and excised out parts of this document. And he was told that, you know, when he got back to London, they were to put a lid on it. It was over. It was to bury it. And our government's been keeping the lid on us for the last 41 years to some degree.
Well, that's why we're doing this show. We're not keeping the lid on anything. We have a few more questions that we'd like to try to get in. Bobby from California has a twofold question. First of all, he asked, gentlemen, do you believe the intention behind the attack is to draw America into the war on the side of the Israelis? And the next part of his question asks, do you know the Israeli general that ordered the attack on the USS Liberty? Do you know the name?
The answer to the first one is yes. The answer to the second one, there's been speculation, but no, we do not know.
So you don't know who the general was?
Moshe Dayan was a name that's popped up, but...
Yeah, Moshe Dayan is a name that's been banded around.
Right, but...
Mm-hmm.
Knowing it's all different.
Exactly. Thus far, it is speculation based on a good deal of evidence that you have gathered.
Right. I mean, there's a lot of things that I think they would agree with me that we don't have much doubt about what really happened and what went on. Just from surmising and looking at events prior to and after what happened. But to actually... be able to prove it beyond any shadow of a doubt to someone, perhaps we can't. To a rational person, they would agree with us, but, you don't go into court with a bluff.
Mm. Yeah, we have another question. Sherry in Michigan, what do you think about the notion that the attack was launched to prevent the U.S. from finding out about the killing of the Egyptian POWs nearby?
That again is another one of those stories that we've heard, and I don't know if that's true or not true. And you know, for me to say one way or the other, I would be doing the audience a disservice.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It was only a few years ago, though, that the Egyptians did find a mass grave in that general area.
Here is an interesting one. Khaled Rahal from California. Is it true that the crew of the USS Liberty witnessed the Israeli soldiers force the Egyptian soldiers dig their own graves and that the Egyptian soldiers were buried alive? That's kind of out
that's
there.
That's totally false.
Yeah, I've never heard that myself.
I've heard that story, but we weren't ashore, so we there's no way we could have witnessed it.
I see. Yeah, that's kind of out there.
You could see the shoreline at El Arish, and you could see the top of one of the mosques there, but that was about all you could see.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. And Brian in Texas, do either of the gentlemen think that the U.S. government did not do all they could to give the USS Liberty safe passage in those hostile waters?
Well, I can answer that. When we were halfway through the Mediterranean, we went to Admiral Martin, the commander of the 6th Fleet, and requested an armed escort. And he came back with a message saying that we were a U.S. ship in international waters and a non-combatant, and we didn't require one. So,
mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
We brought this show to our listeners in order that we keep this oral history of what happened to Americans aboard a U.S. ship in 1967. Here, we don't want to forget, and we hear constantly, we do not want to forget 9-1-1, but we do want to forget the USS Liberty. Why do you suppose that is, gentlemen?
It's an embarrassment.
Well, it's a different person that attacked us.
Right. If it had been anybody else, it would be different. But being at the State of Israel, and as David said earlier in the program, the influence that AIPAC has over the bought and paid for politicians that are totally spineless. They know if they vote against Israel or do anything that Israel doesn't like, Israel will have a candidate to run against them next 2 or 4, 6 years later, and they'll be toast. Kind of like the Cynthia McKinney story there in the 4th District in Atlanta, Georgia. Let me ask you something, Sheena, if I may.
Please do.
I'm sure that there's other crewmen that would be willing to come on your program if you would want to have a, you know, crewman in the future follow up on what Dave and I talked about tonight.
We absolutely would love to have them on our show. And I will personally make sure that, our producer, Mike, talks to you gentlemen about this and sets something up in the future.
Okay. Because, like I say, we have some very knowledgeable, extremely capable guys, technical people, do very good interviews, and, all we want, as Dave said earlier, we just want the truth told. That's all we want. And I only speak for myself when I say this, that telling the truth and being pro-American is anti-Semitic, and hell, I'm anti-Semitic.
Well, it has, I know that the anti-Semite word gets tossed around anytime the big I word, the big Israeli word, gets tossed around. And we can't allow a mythological creature like called anti-Semitism to get in the way of truth. We have to honor and respect the truth. If we do not, then I don't believe, if Americans do not honor and respect the truth, I don't think we have a chance in hell of changing and altering the course of events that are coming up. I want to thank you both for being with us today. This has been an incredible honor. I, for one, am proud that people like you have continued to put out the word, to shed light on the truth, to not be afraid, to not shrink when the mythological creature anti-Semitism is thrown your way, and to stand tall and say this has nothing to do with anti-Semitism, it has to do with a crime.
Anti-Zionism.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, lady. Thank you, everyone. I want to invite you all tomorrow night with our host, David Swanson, who will be interviewing Elizabeth Kucinich, wife of Congressman Dennis Kucinich, and an international advocate for human rights and environmental sustainability and global prosperity. Next week, Tuesday night, join me, Basma Farhat, with our guest, Malika Chopra, daughter of Deepak Chopra, author and UNICEF spokesperson. David, Gary, again, God bless you. Keep up the good work. We depend on people like you, and thank you.
Regina, we depend on folks like you. Thank you for having us on. Good evening.
Good evening to you, gentlemen. That's it, folks. Thank you very much for being here. We'll see you tomorrow night with David Swanson.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of fast, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.
if you know what I mean. No hesitating, slip away from the scene. Sound surrounding, let it flow. I've got a green light, hey baby, I'm good to go. That's the catch, the whole done deal, the whole shooting match. What can I say? What can I do? Wear a different hat or pull a disappearing.